welcome back to the Normalize You podcast. I'm your host, Gabby, and today we have a very special guest. Her name is Chrissy King. Chrissy King is a writer, speaker, strength coach, and educator with a passion for creating a diverse and inclusive wellness industry. She empowers individuals to stop shrinking, start taking up space, and to use their energy to create their specific magic in the world. She has been featured in Self, Shape, Health, Cosmopolitan, BuzzFeed, Muscle and Fitness, and Livestrong, among many others. With degrees in social justice and sociology from Marquette University, Chrissy merges her passion for social justice and her passion for fitness to empower individuals within the fitness and wellness industry to create spaces that allow individuals from all backgrounds to feel seen, welcome, respected, and celebrated. So, without further ado, I would love to introduce you to Chrissy King. Hi, Chrissy. Welcome to the Normalize You podcast. How are you doing today?
I am so great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Me too. It's so awesome to finally meet you. I feel like there's so many awesome, cool people on Instagram, social media platforms that are just making such a tremendous change in the world. And so it's really cool to finally like put a name to the face and get to see people, even if it's virtually, I know, because of the pandemic, but.
Still really cool. I love meeting new people from social, so it's awesome.
Yeah. So I saw that in your bio, and you kind of identify as a lot of roles, a writer, a speaker, a strengthening coach, and an educator. And I was just curious for me and for anybody who's listening, which role is your favorite?
So I feel like soon I'll have to stop saying strength coach, cause I have like maybe two clients left. I don't take new clients anymore. So, but I think my favorite roles right now is writer and educator. I think those are the things that I really, I'm doing a lot of and I'm really enjoying. So I think that would be, I'm writing a book right now. So I think that's what I would say. Yeah.
How did you start writing?
I'm sorry.
How long ago did you start writing?
So I did a formal book proposal probably a couple of months ago and just recently signed a book deal. So at the very beginning stages.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Are we allowed to have a little bit of a sneak peek of what it's about or like a broad topic or not yet?
Sure, no, I can definitely tell you the book is all about body liberation. So and intersecting identity. So I'm really excited to a lot of the work that I talk about on my social media, my Instagram, but just in more in depth and in more brevity. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. For those that are listening, they may not know that much about the Body Liberation Project and how you created it and how what it means to you. So I'd love to hear from you what it's about.
Yeah. So Body Liberation Project is, you know, I talk about body liberation as not different from body positivity, but I think it's much more in depth than body positivity tends to go. And I write from a lot of in my own personal examples and struggles with body image. And that's what brought me to this work that I'm doing now, honestly. But when I think about body liberation, for me, it's so much more than just like how your ability to love yourself. And those things are important. I think everybody should be able to love and appreciate their bodies, but it's also understanding that at our essence and our core, we're so much more than our bodies. You know, our bodies are just the thing that allow us to have this human experience. It doesn't make us who we are. And we all are inherently worthy because we exist. And so when I think about liberation, it's that total freedom to exist and appreciate, love, respect our bodies in all of its iterations. Also with the recognition that our bodies are always changing. They were designed to do that. And so, you know, from the time we're born till we die, we're gonna have so many different iterations of our bodies. And we could spend all of our time and our energy focusing on shrinking, maintaining, changing it, or we could just, you know, spend that energy doing the things we want to do and creating a life that is really meaningful and fulfilling for us. And so, and beyond just that, I think, you know, the ability to love yourself personally is one part of the puzzle. And I want everybody to be able to do that. But then I think we also have to look at other things, right? Like systemic issues that make it harder for some people in different and marginalized bodies, particularly to have access to that. And to realize that even if, you know, if I, for example, existed and I don't, but let's pretend that I existed in a Black, trans, queer, disabled body, right? I could love myself, but that doesn't mean there's not still systemic harm and oppression that I'm experiencing in the world. And so for me, body liberation is, yes, the individual, and then how are we dismantling the system so that the collective, all of us can have that freedom to feel good and exist in our bodies safely.
The body positive and the body acceptance and just the health at every size community wasn't a huge thing back then. So when did you first start getting more involved and more educated on these concepts?
Right, exactly. So it's really interesting because when I start having these conversations, about bodies, but also with the intersection of like race and gender and all these things. I started talking in the fitness and wellness space probably like 4 or 5 years ago about why it's important to create an anti-racist fitness industry and why we need to have more diversity and inclusion. And you're correct, like those conversations just weren't common 4 or 5 years ago at all. And so I think through my work in that, and then also just talking about bodies is another part of the work I do. For me, like those things is they just go together, because you can't really think about body justice or body politics without thinking about these other things. And so, you know, I have a background in social justice. I went to college for social justice and sociology, and then I fell in love with fitness and became a coach and a trainer. And so for me, when I come into the industry, like I look at everything through a social justice lens. And so for me, the work I get to do now is like a perfect merger of the things I'm really passionate about. And I think it's just through my experience with body image and recognize growing up in a very, I'm from the Midwest. I live in Brooklyn now, but I'm from the Midwest. And I grew up going to schools at private schools where I was like the only, me and my brother, my sister were the only like Black kids in the entire school, and always feeling very different, right? And feeling like I could do all these things to try to meet these standards, but I was still different on the outside. And so I think understanding that the complexities of different identities when it comes to being able to love and appreciate and respect and see yourself even as beautiful, right? I think now we're getting much better in terms of representation, but in terms of even seeing people who look like myself represented positively when I was younger, I just didn't see that as much. And so all of those things have an impact. And, you know, when we're thinking about and talking about body image is really a collection of the way we see ourselves, but also the experiences that we've had in the world. And all those things shape why we feel the way we feel about ourselves. And so I just think it's so important to be thinking about all of the factors that come into people's ability to actually just even be neutral about their bodies.
Did you ever have a moment in your life where you realized that your body looked different from the rest, or that it maybe didn't look like the quote unquote ideal body?
Absolutely. So it's funny because I always used to tell this story that my first moment recognizing that there was something wrong with my body, for the longest time I was telling this story, and it's still a very clear story. It was when I was like 16 years old. My parents had gone through a divorce, having a hard time. I gained weight. I knew that I gained weight, but it wasn't something that like bothered me. But I was at school one day in cafeteria, and this boy, and I still remember his name, he, instead of everybody, made a joke about like, hey, I can tell you've been eating good, to point out the fact that I gained weight. And I just felt so embarrassed and ashamed in that moment that I was like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me looking like this. I have to change it. And I immediately went on like an Atkins diet, lost a bunch of weight. And so for the longest time, I was telling people that was my first like dabble into weight loss. But like maybe a year ago, I went home for the holidays and I was helping my mom clean out the basement, and I found an old journal of mine. It was dated 1998. So 1998, I was 12 years old. And my first journal entry in the journal was it was January 1st. And I was like, I'm so tired because I stayed up late with my friends, but I have to exercise and work out even though I don't feel like it. And then the next couple pages in the journal was like my diet plan. And I was like, I don't even have any recollection at 12 years old having a diet plan, but it included things like my breakfast couldn't be more than 300 calories and only 3 grams of fat. And I don't even remember that, but I was like, how sad that at 12 years old, I was already putting myself on a diet and exercise plan. And I don't even know like where I got the idea at such a young age that that's what I needed to do. And so I was just recently, when I was, you know, preparing a book proposal, I was reading some stats that, you know, the average age for a person to start talking about and thinking about their weight is like 6 to 8 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what a tragedy that is, that at 6 years old, we already are thinking about our bodies.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, I have a little 7-year-old half sister, and like, she's like, you know, willy nilly, like in a little other world, and she doesn't have any issues with body, thank God. But just thinking about the fact that she potentially could be, and there's kids out there at that age that even would even cross their minds that they're like, oh, my body needs to change, it's not good enough, you know? And as a therapist, I specialize in eating disorders, and I see little kids that age with eating disorders, and it just breaks my heart. And it just, the pervasiveness of diet culture is so toxic.
So toxic. And that's one of the things, you know, with Body Liberation Project that's really important to me, because I think I come across people in my work all the time that are, you know, in their 40s, 50s, older even, that are struggling with these things and have been struggling their entire lives. And then, you know, talking about people, children as young as 6 already struggling with that. You know, my hope is that over time we can start to change that narrative, right? Because I think for kids, yes, it's in TV and media, but I'm sure we also pick up those habits from people that we're around that are struggling with their bodies, right? Yeah. Our personal influences. And so the goal is that more that we collectively heal, we're raising a generation that's better off than we are also.
Yeah, definitely. And I think part of that too is this, which is so hard to do. It's so much easier said than done, is like placing boundaries in our lives with loved ones, with friends, with professionals, because unfortunately, just a lot of people are not psychoeducated on it. And so it's not that they necessarily have malintent, you know, it's just that they don't know any better. It's what they were raised around. So I'm curious, like, what has placing boundaries in your life looked like, and has it been difficult?
Yes, that's such a great question. Placing boundaries is difficult, right? And I've had to put a lot of boundaries in my life, not just around bodies, just around everything. And for example, I was raised in a very conservative Christian home, homophobic in a lot of ways, right? But all like very steeped in religion. And I love my family, but like, I don't jive with that. And I don't believe that. That's not my belief system. And so even with now as an adult, I'm 35 years old, and my mom is still very much in the same frame of thought, right? And so boundaries look like, you know, she says whatever she says. I'm like, mom, I don't want to talk about this. We're not having this conversation. You already know how I feel about this. Mm-hmm. Talk about this with someone else, right? Which is not an easy thing to say. But when it comes to like our bodies, it's really, I think boundaries is a matter of telling people where you stand and letting them know, like, this is what you accept, this is, and what you don't accept, what you don't want in your space. But then also, I think even sometimes a step further than that is also, you know, when it feels safe for you, also interrupting or disrupting things that are happening. And I think, especially when it comes to bodies, I always encourage us to start thinking about our casual talk and conversation, right? We say things like, does this make me look fat? And then people say, no, you look great. And so many problems with that statement already, right? Do I look fat? Implying that fat is a bad thing. And then to say, no, you don't look fat, you look great. Meaning that if you were in a larger body, you didn't look great, right? These are these are things that are very insidious in our culture. We see it in TV, we see it everywhere. And so, and even with ourselves, right? We catch ourselves saying these things. And so it's like, start to really look at our own implicit bias, look at that phobia in our own lives. And I think that's a form of boundaries too, right? That if we really want to dismantle diet culture in our lives and around us, we have to start to examine some of the things that are right in front of us happening in our own circles. And then, yeah, have those difficult conversations. And boundaries are uncomfortable sometimes, right? And letting people know what you will or will not accept for behavior that engages with you can be really uncomfortable. But it's also totally necessary. And I think particularly when you're on a journey of trying to heal your relationship with body image and dismantle diet culture in your life, those are conversations that definitely involve family members, right? And the way, you know, go to family gatherings and hearing the way people talk about food and like, oh my God, I'm gonna get fat, or I ate too much, all these comments that are casual. Yeah. It definitely involves having those difficult conversations, but it's necessary though.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. And like I said before, it's like a generational thing too. I think people, you grow up hearing those things and you just think it's like norm, right? It's so normalized to speak that way. But now we're becoming a lot more psychoeducated on the sensitivity and how we should be speaking and how we should be directing what we say. And like, you know, little comments like that, you know, I remember in my childhood and things like that, little comments like that planted the seed for me. And I know it plants the seed for so many people to be like, okay, someone made a comment, that means my body doesn't look right, or it needs to be changed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if the comment is not directed at you, right?
Yes.
Talk about each other and you're like, oh, mental note, that's not.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. 100%. So this might be a little bit of a tough question, but I'm curious as to what you think. Do you feel like for people, like for example, the first person that comes to mind for me is like Lizzo or big time famous celebrities, that even though it's not right for, personally, I believe, for society to put them on this pedestal of like the body positive idol, I don't think that's fair to put that much pressure on somebody and to give them an identity that they may not want to accept, you know, whatever their personal beliefs are. Do you feel like it is their social responsibility to present themselves in a certain way, or to maybe not engage in diet culture if so many people look at them in a certain way, if that makes any sense? And I'm sure you've heard about it. I'm referring to the Lizzo situation with the juicing and all that stuff and all the upheaval that happened. Right. And there were so many sides to the story. And I'm just curious to your views on it.
Yeah, that I talked about this on social, actually. A lot of times I don't engage with things that happen, like whatever, pop culture. Yeah. I talked about this one in particular because, for one, I have very strong feelings about it, right? For so many reasons. Number one, I think that Lizzo is a fat Black woman who identifies as such. And already she has so much undue pressure on her because of that identity, right? To start with. Number two, I never, Lizzo talks very freely about loving herself and loving her curves and loving whatever, but I've never heard Lizzo say that I am the face of body positivity or that I am your role model, I am your guru. I've never seen her identify as that. And I think it's awesome that we've been able to find inspiration through her journey publicly with loving her body and appreciating her body and accepting her body. But for us to put pressure on her that she doesn't have autonomy of what she does with her body, it's unfair, right? And then going beyond that, it was really harmful to me to see people attack her for the decisions that she made as if she's not also a victim of the same system that we all are a victim of.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
We're all in the same system. And to think that Lizzo doesn't have struggles with her body, whatever her decisions for juicing were, right? Mm-hmm. That's not even part of the conversation. Whatever, to assume that she should be perfect or that she should not struggle with her body or that any of that, like, she's a human just like we are. We are all victims. So what made me like infuriated about that situation is that where people were putting the onus and responsibility on Lizzo, and I'm like, no, it's the system, y'all. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Like anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I don't think it's on celebrities. Even if Lizzo says she's the face of body positivity, but she didn't, she's still allowed to have, like, you know, a hard time with her body. Like, we all are part. And to think how, I can't even imagine what that feels like to be on display for the whole world, right? Mm-hmm. And Lizzo puts her body on display beautifully all the time, but I've gotten her comments, and I'm sure you have too, and seen
Horrible things.
Right. And so to have to, on one hand, deal with those horrible comments while you're trying to love yourself as a fat Black woman, and then the other hand, when you do something that the body positive community doesn't like, then for them to attack you, I can't imagine that. And I just think that's pressure that no one should have to deal with.
I agree 100%. I have the exact same view as you. And I'm curious, what do you think about the fact that she did post like the before and after kind of reel? Like, did you feel like that was harmful? Did you feel that was necessary?
So, I mean, I personally am not a fan of before and after pictures, period, right?
Me neither.
I've never done it. Back in my early fitness journey, before I figured out a lot of these things for myself, I posted before and after pictures, and I've never taken them down off my Instagram because I leave them there because I want people to know, like, we are allowed to evolve and change and learn and grow. Right? So I'm not a fan of before and after pictures. I personally think that before and after pictures are always harmful, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But again, what I don't like is the fact that people came for Lizzo when I feel like, for me, I always look at the aspect of race into, and I just think society judges Black women on a harsher scale than anyone else.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And like, how many other people post before and after pictures all the time, right? Yeah. Like, why don't we come for those? Why are we coming for Lizzo when she's clearly, you know, whatever, living her life? I just think it's interesting to me, like, what topics people, because again, they put her on this pedestal and now they're like, well, she didn't perform the way we think that she should perform based on the ideas that we have about what she should be. Mm-hmm. So we're going to like have an opinion about this as if the harm that's not happening, the harm of before and after pictures aren't happening every day, everywhere. And again, ultimately, I think all of us have the right to have body autonomy, right?
Yes.
And if Lizzo was doing her juice fast to intentionally lose weight, we can still acknowledge as part of diet culture, but that's still our choice.
Yeah, 100%.
And again, I keep going back to the same point, is never, Lizzo never asked to be the face of body positivity, you know? No, she never said, I'm single-handedly dismantling diet culture. She didn't say that.
Exactly. 100%. No. And I also think too, is like something that I've just learned from creating a social media presence and, you know, posting content and whatnot, is like, it doesn't matter what I do. And it really doesn't matter what anybody does. You can't please every single human being out there in the world. Like, you're going to, somebody's going to get riled up. Someone's going to get upset. Someone's going to get offended, right? You should always proceed with the best intention, in my opinion. And you should be conscientious of what you're posting. And I think you should represent your values, like, not be a hypocrite, right? But like, at the end of the day, people have autonomy to their opinions as well. And just like they do to their bodies. And so we can't expect everybody to perform and act the way that we want them to. And then the minute that they don't, to get so pissed off and start just like, being so cruel. Like, it's just like, why? Can we just be kind?
And I also think it's like a point of reflection for all of us to, when we find ourselves wanting to do that, to just, again, question or examine our belief system that we individually have the ability to decide how someone else should perform, especially when we put them on a pedestal in our own minds, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a difference, right? Like, I'm gonna be honest, if I saw, I'm not gonna even name a name, but if I saw some like well-known person who was like the face of body positivity or whatever, and then all of a sudden they were doing something like that, then I would be like, wow, I would be critical of that in a different
Yeah.
way because they claim, you know what I mean? Like that feels very hypocritical to the work they do. But
Yeah.
Lizzo's a music artist. She's a performist, right?
Exactly.
And that's her identity. That's what she, not her identity, but that's what she does. She's
Yeah.
not in the anti-diet culture space, like doing any of that work.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. So to shift gears a little bit with regards to like working out and joyful movement, how do you approach strength training from the perspective of like we're doing this to celebrate our bodies, to feel empowered, and to not use the diet approach and the weight loss approach? Because it's so easy to get sucked into that. So I'm wondering how you approach that with, I know you said you only have like two clients, but just in general, I guess.
Yeah, with the clients I worked with clients for a really long time. And again, I think it's shifted over the years because when I first became a trainer, I was working with clients. I was definitely engaging in diet culture. Like I won't even like pretend that I wasn't. But
Yeah.
I started to learn more and change and grow as a person individually. It definitely changed the way I do coaching. And so one of the things, you know, and it was so evident in the way that I put out my work that it got to the point where people came to me because they knew I was like anti-diet, right, or diet culture. And so I think when it comes to movement, even for myself as a practice, there was a time where I worked out and it was all about control and about making, you know, I said it under the guise of health, but it was really about, you know, I can't miss my workouts, I can't do this, and I have to train this particular way, even if I don't feel like training that way right now, because that's the best way to, you know, like change your physique or whatever. And I didn't really allow myself to ever think about like what my body wanted. I was just like, I have to go train. This is the work I'm gonna do. And even if I didn't feel like it, I'm like, I'm going anyways. My body could be like, no energy. I'm really doing it anyways. And spending a long time in the gym, hours in the gym. And then as I've changed my relationship with exercise, I was like, well, the point of, for when I think of health, right, it's not about a number on the scale anymore. It's not about looking a particular way. When I think about health, whether it's eating or mental, spiritual, emotional, physical health, it's like, I want to feel energized. I want to feel nourished. I want to feel whole. And I want to listen to my body and treat my body with love and compassion and care. And so that's impacted my journey with fitness because I'm like, okay, if I wake up and I'm really craving like, you know, a strength training workout, then great, I'm going to go do that. If I'm like, actually, I just really want to walk, I'm going to walk. Or if I want to do something fun, I want to dance. And there was a time where I didn't even see like dancing as like a form of movement or exercise, right? Because I was thinking of it as exercise, but it's a form of movement. And I want to use my body. I want movement to add to my life, not to be a form of punishment. And
Of
so,
course.
you know, now I just do what feels good for me depending on the day. And I trust that my body is intuitive enough to know what it needs and what it doesn't need. And, you know, yesterday I had like really great intentions to go to the gym. I was exhausted and I was like, yeah, I'm just going to take a nap instead, right? Because my body could
There you
really
go.
be served by a nap versus going to like push it when it's already tired. And so I think we can, if we can start to think less about, you know, exercise as a modality to punish or to control our bodies and more as a way that we can actually nourish and have fun and enjoy the process, I think that we can, it's just, we'll be better off for it. And also, it won't be something that we have like a negative relationship with. It's something that we can actually enjoy, and movement should be fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. So kind of connected to that, what would you say is kind of like the red flags for you with regards to, hey, I need to take a step back and take care of myself and kind of really focus on my mental health? Because I'm sure you're so busy. You know, you do so many things, you have so many roles. And sometimes we need a mental health break. And so I'm curious as to for you, what are the signs that tell you like it's time for that break?
For me, it's definitely when I'm just feeling super overwhelmed on a consistent basis. I think there, of course, we have days where you're busy back to back, you'll feel overwhelmed. But I'm consistently feeling overwhelmed, or I feel like I'm drowning. I'm like, okay, red flag. I need to take some time. I find myself like super irritable about things that normally wouldn't be that big of a deal to me, and like I'm feeling like little things are like triggering me. I'm like, all right, probably need a break right now. And I think too, when I'm just so busy that I don't feel like I'm making time for enjoyable activities or downtime. And I keep thinking like, oh yeah, after this month though, the next month will slow down. And I found myself in that pattern for a long time. And I was like, I'm never going to slow down unless I intentionally take the time to do that. And I think, you know, whatever our work is, I think I tend to do, especially because I do a lot of work around anti-racism, it can be really draining sometimes. And so I think it's as much as I'm putting out, I try to ensure that I'm taking time to restore myself. And feel, and like capitalism has this impact, at least on me, where you feel like you have to be productive, you have to go, you have to do
Oh, yeah.
more. And so when I feel myself leaning into like, I'm not doing enough, even though I'm doing a lot, I'm like, all right, time to step back again and reevaluate, reprocess. So yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Burnout can happen so quickly if we don't take care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah. So diet culture is all around us, obviously. So I'm curious from your personal experiences, from your education, from your professionalism, all that, what advice would you give to someone who maybe wants to ditch diet culture, but like has no idea where to start and feels really overwhelmed by the process?
Yeah, I think, you know, education is a big piece because I think we hear the word diet culture thrown out a lot. There's so much information on social media, but it can also be like a little like ambiguous. Like, what is this diet culture?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always a big fan of reading books, and two books that I really love that I think are great from a first, well, first I'll talk about the book Anti-Diet by Kirsten. I love that book. And I think it also, for those people who are more into research and the science behind things, like she has a fair amount of explanation also with studies to back that up. And then I also love The Body Is Not Apology by Sonia Rich Taylor, which is like a book as well. And so from there, I think, you know, starting to really be, and I love Sonia's book because I think it helps us start to think about intersecting identities, but also I think allows us to just start to question some of the beliefs that we have, right? And start to question some of our own biases around these topics. And so I think that's like a really great starting point for people. And then I think we just have to be really conscientious about the content that we're consuming, you know, and it's hard because there's so much information on social media, right? It can just be so confusing and so overwhelming. But I think really start to investigate who we're taking our advice from, who we're taking our information from, and start to be really mindful of that and start to connect with people whose messaging really feels aligned. It feels like what we want to actually embody in our lives. I think that's really important. And I think, again, with diet culture and, you know, it's a mindset shift really, but I think even more than that, when we decide to disengage from diet culture, it can also come with a sense of loss and grief sometimes, right? Because when you are letting go of things that have you, like, you know, practices that really controlled your life, it feels uncertain sometimes. And naturally your body may change. If you, you know, when I stopped restricting my diet, like I was, my body changed, right? When I stopped exercising 7 days a week, my body changed. And so there's also can be a sense of like letting go of what was, so it can be so many different feelings that come along with it. But I just encourage, you know, everyone to think about, you know, if you came to a place of liberation where you felt complete freedom and you felt wholeness and in your body, what would that actually feel like for you on a day-to-day basis? And what are the things I can do to start to feel that way?
Yeah, definitely. I love what you said about normalizing the feelings that come with ditching diet culture, because it's uncomfortable, right? We've wired our brain to think a certain way. Now we're going to unwire it and rewire it completely and kind of adapt this new lifestyle that's more about healing your body and accepting it and going against the grain, essentially, right? Because going against the grain with diet culture is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just so important to not beat yourself up for feeling grief, for missing, you know, pursuing the unrealistic thin ideal. It's going to take some time to cope and to let go.
Yeah. And to your, the one thing I'd like to add to that too, is I think one thing that we don't talk about enough is also the fact that, you know, thin privilege is a real thing that exists in the world, right? So when you decide to disengage with diet culture, on one side, you can understand the system's really broken and flawed. And on the other side, you can be like, but I really like this proximity to privilege that I have because of this, right? And so even when you know the system's broken, there'd be times where you still maybe want to participate. And I understand why that, because it's a really hard place to be in. And so I also encourage people to always, no matter where you are on the journey, to show yourself compassion. You know, it's never a place of feeling guilt or shame. It's always about meeting yourself with compassion and understanding these are really nuanced, complex topics.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Man, I could talk to you for hours, probably. I love chatting with you. And I just think these topics are so awesome to discuss. And, you know, they're not talked about enough. Like, we can't have enough conversations about these things. They're just so important. And I hope, you know, I know people will get so much value from this conversation. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day and busy work schedule to chat with me.
It was so much fun. I feel the same way. I'm like, this time flew by. I could definitely like sit here and talk to you all day.
Thank
you for having me on. It was such a great conversation.
Yes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day, Chrissy.
You too.
Bye.